honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Just a heads up, if you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find not only a video with Bob Cole, from whom we're hearing on this program, but also the CBS News piece with his fellow Hornet survivor, Richard Nowatzki, and other links related to the discovery of the aircraft carrier that launched the Doolittle Raid 77 years ago, the USS Hornet. Here's another related note on recent events. Just a couple of weeks ago in Missoula, Montana, the VA clinic there was renamed in honor of David Thatcher, a Doolittle Raider who shared his story on Hometown Heroes long ago. You can link to that interview online as well. In a moment, we're going to hear more of 96-year-old Bob Cole's thoughts on that long-lost ship being found by the research vessel Petrel. But first, more on what he went through in 1942.
You talked about being in shock when that bomb hit and you're hit in the back and your eyes hanging out. When did that shock wear off, and when did you realize what had happened to you?
I think the shock wore off was when I was on board the hospital ship Solis. They had, more trained doctors, because when you're on board, like that destroyer, and you're moving, and you're the operator, you know, he's trying to do the best he can, but you're still under fire, and you're moving. And so when I was aboard the Solis, the hospital ship, you know, they're standing still. They're not moving. In fact, they wanted to take my eye out and give me a glass eye. Thank God that cargo ship came along. Because what am I going to say? But they know more medically than I do. And so I figured whatever they say is going to happen. So I was very fortunate that I still have my same eye. But little by little, I can distinguish day and night. And once in a while, I can see a hand, but if you put one or two or three, I would never see that. So
you see fine out of your right eye, but the left eye has never been the same since.
No, and the right eye that's why I go to the Veterans Hospital here every 4 months, and they give me, I put drops in my eye, and DMV wants 20/40, but the best I can get is 20/50. And the DMV say, that's good enough for me. Uh-huh. So far.
Well, I know you covered a lot of miles all those years of refereeing basketball, and that I have to go there because it's too ripe for the picking. What is the biggest criticism about referees every year, that they need glasses or they can't see? Did you ever have some people heckle you about your basketball reffing?
I said, hey, I got both eyes, but I only see out of one. And then a lot of times they razz you, and then I might say, I'm laughing all the way to the bank.
If they only knew what that eye had been through, it would be heaping coals on top of their heads, I'm sure.
Most of the coaches, you know, we might meet at the bar, and we have good times. And I remember one time when I met at the bar, and I put my glasses on, and this coach's wife says, why in the hell didn't you put those glasses on while you're refereeing? I said, I might have seen too much, and caused the game to go longer.
Yeah, we don't want that whistle blowing too much. So you said, was it 8 months in the hospital?
8 months. There's a comic side of that, too, you know, because I had both eyes covered all the time because they didn't want to have the strain on one eye. But if you wanted liberty whenever you're able, you had to do one or two things. You either polish all the brass in your area or go to the zoo and clean out the zoo pens. I said, well, I'm not going to the zoo. I've been in the zoo all my life. Out in that water, that's the zoo. Yeah. So I didn't go much liberty. No, either that or just polish the brass.
8 months is a long time. And your back's healing up, your eyes healing up. What was the hardest thing for you to deal with?
Well, I told you before this, you know, I never had a chance to call my mother to let her know where I am because I knew I was listed as MIA. When I was able to get to the phone, when they allowed me to use the phone, I called my mom and told her, she's in shock because she hadn't heard anything from me.
She thought you were dead.
Yeah. In fact, they had a funeral for me. That was before I called her. And I called her, and she's, oh, God. Well, she had a sister living in Glendale, and so she immediately called her sister, and her sister came down and visited me once a month. That was something. But, you know, it was lonely. You lay there and you can't see because your both eyes are covered. In fact, when I was going to college and my wife and I was all covered, and I had a biology class and I had to trace the blood from the start to the finish in your heart. and I couldn't read a book, so she would read it to me. You go from the, this vein to this, this ventricle, this ventricle, this artery, this artery. I pass it.
And that's what I'm wondering, because, I mean, I think it's obvious to everyone listening, it's pretty remarkable that you survived when so many did not that day. So in all this time where you're recovering, you got your eyes covered, you can't see anything, you're in a pretty helpless situation. Did you ever think that you would get married someday, that you'd have a daughter, that you'd have grandkids and great-grandkids?
Never even thought about it. All I thought about is getting healthy, get back on my feet, go to college. I really wanted to go to college. Because all my friends at Odo, you know, they came from pretty rich families. When I say rich, I mean they're better off than we were. And they're all going to college, and what am I going to do? There's no jobs in a town of 300 people. You got two gas stations, two grocery stores, a bank, the post office. That's it. I felt lonely, hoping someday to get back to normal.
And it was a good thing you went to college, not just because you had a great 30-year career as a teacher, but because that's where you met your wife.
I met my wife, and we were married 62 years before she died of dementia.
You want to tell us a story of how you met her over there?
We played cards at the Union. Neither one of us had much money. See, I was living off in the Navy, and we played cards, bridge, and then we'd go from there. We might go to the shop. We'd order a Coke and two straws. Get ice cream, we get two spoons. So it's very, very important, very wonderful woman.
And I'm curious, as your career in education went on, did you ever bring up your war experience? Did you ever share that with anybody?
No, never. Kept quiet. You know, to this day, I don't belong to the American Legion. I don't belong to VFW. I don't belong to the Purple Heart.
Why not?
I don't like to be around people, and all they're talking about is war stories. I have my own, and I get tired of hearing the same. I don't like to hear war stories. Yeah. That's why I don't join those groups. I've had opportunities after opportunities. Sure. I'm sure they would help me get better, more benefits than I get, but I'm satisfied. Like I tell my wife, and she says, what did you do with this? And I said, I don't want to talk about it.
And you keep your Purple Heart, the same one you got nearly 70 years ago, tucked away. Do you remember when they gave it to you? Was it a general that gave it to you, or how'd you get it?
I tell you how I got it. I didn't even know I had it. I was at the University of Iowa, and my mom called, and she says, guess what? I said, what? Some Navy people came to the house, and they presented the Purple Heart to you. I didn't even know I had it. So when I went home that weekend, I got to see the Purple Heart.
What does that mean to you?
It means that they gave me some credit for the time I spent and the parts of my life I gave up. It means a lot to me. They say I should have other medals, and I said, well, I don't care about it. My main thing is my health.
So I know you can't do this. It doesn't look possible, but if you could go down to the bottom of the ocean and find the wreckage of the Hornet, what would you try to get out of there? What went down with that ship that you wish you still had?
I like those pictures I have with Doolittle. And then the pictures I have with him, the pilots, any souvenirs that I got when I was in Hawaii, there's not much I had. You know, being a rookie, a petty officer, you don't have many things.
So when I was asking Bob about that on this program in 2013, I had no idea, and of course neither did he, that the Hornet would be discovered here in 2019, that he would still be going strong with technology allowing him to look at images of that sunken vessel from 3 miles deep, stirring more memories of long ago.
It does. It really does, because bringing that ship up, the first thing that comes to my mind is the kamikaze pilots that hit the tower, put the power out, and then that bomber hitting the bottom of it. And also brought my memories of the Indianapolis. They tied it to the ship and tried to pull it, you know, pull it out, but they couldn't do it because, you know, out there you got to zigzag because they're out there, they're dropping bombs or the fighters are coming in spraying you. That's what we had to worry about when we were in the water, you know, waiting for a ship to come to pick you up.
Yeah.
And so when they did pick us up, that it's funny because you just, I was on the destroyer. Mm-hmm. You go this way and this way and this way, and all that time they're trying to sew my eye up. It brings back a lot of, a lot of good memories about the ship too. You know, I joined before the war,
right?
In August of 1941, and after the boot camp, I was assigned to the Hornet in Northport, Virginia. We didn't have any guns, no pilots, no planes or anything. And war broke out.
Mm-hmm.
So it really brings back good memories.
You know, almost 77 years, you're one of the last guys left.
Yeah.
Who survived that day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What does it mean to you that someone took the time and effort to track it down and dive all the way down and find it and take those pictures?
Well, you know, it shows you that there are still people that are history buffs, if you want to use that word. You think that there's people that are still interested in those kind of things to bring back memories of different wars. It shows you that history goes on. Mm-hmm. You repeat, and they try to bring up remnants to prove that this actually really happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just read it out of a book. Yeah. And here it is, right there.
Now that they found your ship, and they're not going to disturb it, it's a mm-hmm. tomb at the bottom of the ocean, but mm-hmm. is there something that's still on that ship that belongs to you?
Oh, you know, in my locker, you can't believe the number of pictures I took when we went through the Panama Canal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I took my wife back there when she was alive. I took every place I went, you know, that we could go to.
Yeah.
And like the Panama Canal, you know, where you had to raise the water because either one side's higher than the other side.
Right.
And then have those tugs tug you through.
Uh-huh.
Like in San Diego, we had pictures of, you know, I was too young to go to a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So I always went to USOs. In San Diego, the Hotel Grant.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful. That was a USO for us down there.
So all those pictures of that are still in your locker?
Huh? Still in my locker.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I had a lot.
Those pictures are still with the Hornet, replaced perhaps now in his mind by the new photos of a mighty ship frozen in time. One thing that hasn't changed in 77 years, Bob's gratitude for having survived that harrowing ordeal.
I know God was looking over me. And number two is I was in the right place at the right time, especially down there when only 12 of us come out alive out of 35. I must have been standing in the place where I got hit but didn't get killed. And those other, they were in the wrong place. And I feel very fortunate. Here in the United States, we got men and women who will stand up and fight for our people, and that people that didn't go in the service, when they see a service woman or a service man, they shake their hands or say, thank you. To think people who didn't want to go or didn't get a chance to go, but they are so grateful for people who do.
And Bob will experience that at a whole new level next month when he flies to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. If you'd like to welcome him home from that special journey, be in Fresno, California on Thursday, April 11th, when he and 70 other veterans land at the airport. We're about out of time, but I did mention I'd have one more note on the idea of this program holding educational value. And thanks to my friends at CaliforniaStreaming.org and the efforts of a dedicated Girl Scout named Katie Chen, 250 episodes of Hometown Heroes are now accessible for more than 330,000 California students in an online database. We'll talk more about that on a future installment of Hometown Heroes. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.